The hour of 3 p.m. having arrived, we'll call the House Commerce Committee to order. The committee legislative assistant will take the role or record the role. I think we should start out with the committee introductions. I think we'll start out with the chairman. And what I'd like to hear is name the favorite place that you like to visit in your district so we know where to go this summer. Chairman Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Joe Hoppe, not today, but normally the chair of this committee from Chaska, represent all of Chaska, about half of Chanhassen, about half of Victoria. There's a lot to pick from, as in everybody's district, so I'm not picking a favorite, just a nice place. I don't know, we could go to Chaska and go to the new curling center.
Okay, right over here.
Oh, gee. You know, I represent District 8B. It is a land of lakes and opportunities, I like to say. There's so much to do in my district, so I hate to single out one, but we do have some really great golfing in my area, so I'll just leave it at that.
And what was your name?
Oh, my name is Mary Franson.
Welcome to the Commerce Committee. Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Lunan, and I represent Shakopee, the land of big fun. And there's, I can't name my favorite place because there's so many of them. I will tell you that last night I was at O'Brien's Public House for a very articulate conversation. I certainly would recommend that.
Hello.
Representative Hillstrom.
I'm Deborah Hillstrom. I represent all the City of Brooklyn Center and parts of Brooklyn Park. And I have a new deck, so that's a really great place to come to in my district. So
we'll
you're all
there.
Welcome.
Bonding money pays off, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I wish.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Dennis Smith representing Maple Grove and Osseo. And in Maple Grove, we have some of the best microbrews in the state, so I encourage you to stop by. Let me know when you come.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jim Nash, District 47A. My district has the unique distinction of having the most places that make alcohol in the state for the districts. I have three wineries, four breweries, a distillery. So we could just get in a bus and hit the district.
Go anywhere.
Yeah. It's all good.
Yeah. So O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Tim O'Driscoll from the Central Minnesota area, and the best place to visit my district, kind of pinging off of what Representative Hillstrom said, is last year I kind of remodeled and redecorated the inside of the house. This summer you'll have an opportunity to do excavation with me and landscaping, and you can say that you had a part in that if you want to come up this summer.
Representative Barr.
I am Regina Barr, and I represent District 52B, which includes Inver Grove Heights, Sunfish Lake, Mendota Heights, and Egan, and I'm having a hard time picking a place, but I'm hearing a lot of brewery-related places, so I'll say the Mississippi Pub, because it's a locally owned pub that sits right on the Mississippi River, and it's a really fun place.
Okay, right around here.
Hello, I'm Laurie Pompa with House Research.
Where do you live?
I live in St. Paul, and
favorite place?
The capital, of course.
Oh, very good. Representative Fenton.
I'm Representative Kelly Fenton. I represent House District 53B, which is Woodbury. And my favorite place would be to get a bite to eat with my husband at Angelina's Kitchen, which is a small mom-and-pop run restaurant, followed by a walk around on the great trails around Powers Lake.
I'm Karen Rudine, Committee Legislative Assistant, and I'm from Lionel Lakes, so my favorite spots are parks.
Oh, hey!
Wow.
John Reynolds, the committee administrator. I live in Minneapolis.
What do you like to do there?
I really enjoyed a recent trip to the frozen Minnehaha Falls. I hiked down to the bottom.
Was that after a trip to Dangerous Man?
No.
How come my fuzzy's gone too? Look at that.
It happened.
Oh, okay. I don't like being with my fuzzy. I'm Linda Slocum, and I should have said Lunan because our pictures were swapped and for the committee, but we got over it. Anyway, I represent Richfield, half of Richfield, and a third of Bloomington. And my favorite place in the district is probably Nakimori for sushi, and then my porch for martinis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to head over to Representative Slocum's home soon. I am Lori Halverson. I represent the eastern half of Eagan, Minnesota, and without a doubt, I'm incredibly proud and enjoy our parks and trails, which are unparalleled. Lebanon Hills, Capone Art Park, the Eagan Art House, lots of places to visit. Google Eagan Parks, come pay a visit, give me a call. You can come to my house for martinis then.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cruchet, represent 9B, which is Morrison and Todd County. Little Falls in the center of that. Of course, my favorite place, and I would invite all of you to come to my house and meet my family, and then we'll take you to all the great places. But I will call out specifically Lindbergh State Park, and many of you may not know we actually have a full zoo. We have a wonderful zoo, so come on up and see. I mean, I'm talking a really... Yeah, without all the crowds. And a zoo at my house as well, Representative.
Jim Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is...
The fuzzy
went off. My name is Paul Rosenthal. I represent District 49B, which is Western Bloomington, Southern Edina, and parts of Eden Prairie and Minnetonka. Nakamori, I was the first customer at, half a mile from my house. I like Three Rivers Park Districts, which, if you look at my district, the vast majority of it is parks, and we have great parks and lakes and chutes and ladders and other wonderful places.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sheldon Johnson, Southeast St. Paul. See, I'd recommend going to Dayton's Bluff, and there's a place called Sweet Hollow Cafe. They make homemade caramel rolls, get a cup of coffee, and enjoy your time there.
Pinto.
So Dave Pinto, southwestern part of St. Paul, so the other side there, Highland Park, McAllister, Groveland, and I would say you want to check out the campuses. Higher Ed St. Kate's is great, a lot of energy, and McAllister, University of St. Thomas. We'll be happy to see you there.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jennifer Loon from Eden Prairie. I represent probably about two-thirds of the city of Eden Prairie, everything south of Highway 5, if you're familiar with that area over there. See, favorite parts of the district or things to do. I think anything our kids are doing at school, theater productions, musicals, sports, we have a wonderful, vibrant, active school and extracurricular community activities to go to. And other spot would be Lion's Tap. Awesome hamburgers at Lion's Tap. So,
Ms. Moore.
My name is Cassandra Moore, and I am DFL Caucus Research. I live in East St. Paul, and I think visiting Lake Phelan would be great for all of you.
Okay.
Peter Strohmeyer, DFL Caucus Research also. I live in West St. Paul, and we have a pretty cool thing called the Dodge Nature Center.
Representative Allen.
Hi. Representative Allen from... South Minneapolis, District 62B, and I live in the Powderhorn Park area, so we have the May Day Parade, the art sled, with the kids make sleds, and we always wait till the coldest day of the year to do it. So.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Sarah Anderson, I represent the Plymouth area, and we're big outdoors people, so in the wintertime we go to the French Regional Sliding Hill, it's pretty good. And skating at all the hockey rinks around town.
Representative Wazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Chris Wazinski, 16A, Lacaparle, Yellow Medicine, Lyon, and Redwood County. I would probably, for the greatest enjoyment, I know you all probably enjoy ice cream, and I would probably invite the, if you don't, well, that's your own problem, but I'd probably bring you to a Schwann's Food Company tour, and that's where you can go and see the factory line and go see how the favorite ice cream treats across the country are made, and you might even get one at the end if you're nice. So,
okay.
Chelsea Whitman, GOP research staff for the caucus, and I'm originally hailing from Afton, so I'd say go to Belwin in the summer when they have cute little baby bison.
And I'm Greg David. So let's, yes, over here.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, my name is Franklin Berg, and I am a committee page.
From?
Stillwater, Minnesota.
What do you do there? Support the ponies? Or?
I do support the ponies, yes.
All right, go ponies, yes.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Stephanie. I'm one of the committee pages. I'm from St. Paul as well.
And what's the best thing to do in your area?
Definitely Dar's Double Scoop on Rice Street. They have amazing ice cream there.
Oh, all right. And I'm Representative Greg Davids, District 20B, Fillmore and Houston Counties, and we have a lot of parks, a lot of farms, a lot of wonderful golf courses, and this may seem a bit odd, but one of the biggest attractions actually is a cemetery, the Southeast Minnesota Veterans Cemetery. I hope you'll come down. It's a very fitting tribute to our veterans. It's an amazing place. And then I'll take up the branding iron. I've got my own little corner there where I kind of hold court, if you will. So that's what we'll do. Chairman Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, everybody, for your, not your necessarily your favorite, but for a good spot in your district. Representative Davids came close to mentioning a church when he mentioned the cemetery, and that was very nice. No one else mentioned a church, but there was a lot of alcoholic beverages mentioned. I just want to note that for the record. Could be an interesting committee. Representative Slocum, it is very nice to have you be the Democrat lead on the committee. And first of all, I didn't know you had a Porsche, but I am looking forward to a martini in it with you. So I don't know, wherever.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Slocum.
That was porch.
Oh! That's a different thing.
Yeah.
That's different.
Okay. Yes, Chairman.
With that, I will say we like to have fun on the committee. We do a lot of serious business here. We're here to do good work for the people of the state. There's no reason we can't have a little bit of fun while we do it. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll hand it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Chair Hoppe moves House File 1. They would be moved to, I believe, Ways and Means. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So that's the motion. Representative Hoppe will now move the 1A4 amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author would like. Chair Hoppe.
Chair, I'm still finding that. I believe that this is an amendment that incorporates changes that came from earlier today from civil law and from HHS policy.
Okay. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hoppe, I'm sorry to do this to you a little bit, but this amendment was heard in civil law this morning. However, we ran out of time and no public testimony was taken on this provision. I intend to bring that up again in civil law when we reconvene at 5 o'clock. So my question is, if you intend to offer this provision here in your committee, will you be taking testimony on these provisions as well in your committee?
Chair Hoppe.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I'll leave that up to the chair, but we certainly can. I think there are probably, I don't know, I wasn't in civil law this morning, but I think some of the same people are probably here. I'd be happy to take testimony on it. And if we need to have it heard in civil law this evening, we can wait and have this provision heard later, unless there are people that are here that want to testify. I would, you know, it's whatever you, we can work something out on it. This, I will say this repeatedly, this bill is a work in progress, and we don't want to do anything that hasn't had public testimony.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I will ask questions that are in this amendment if you adopt it as well, and as long as you allow the people to testify about it, you know.
I think that'd be reasonable.
Call vote or any of those.
I think that'd be reasonable. So Chair Hoppe moves the H00014 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill as amended before us. Okay, so what we'll do here is we will have the author explain the bill as amended, and then I have a list of folks that would like to testify. And if there are others, I mean, if you're not on the list, that's just fine. I just get a note up to Mr. Reynolds here so that we can get you on the list here. So if you could please present your bill and tell us about your bill as amended.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to do that, but I think it'd be behoove the committee to hear from Representative Applebaum first.
Oh, yes. Applebaum, the district you represent and what you like best about your district, the place you'd like to visit, have us visit.
No pressure, though.
John Applebaum, I represent
District 44B, which includes Minnetonka, Plymouth, and Woodland. It's my hometown community, and I think I'd like everyone to come visit where I went to school, both elementary, junior high, and senior high at Hopkins Public Schools on the same block, so you can see where I became such a bright young man, Mr. Chair and members, all in one large block at Cedar Lake Road and Hopkins Cross Road.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, I will officially call the meeting to order as we do have a quorum. Chairman Hoppe, two-year bill is amended.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, this is House File 1, the Premium Relief Act, and I think we all know a lot about this bill. I'll keep the explanation brief. A group of people, House, Senate, Democrat, Republican, and a lot of our staff, partisan and nonpartisan, Democrat and Republican, started working, I don't know when it was, a couple of weeks before the election on this issue. The idea at the time was to get a bill done so that we could have a brief, focused special session to get some premium relief out and also look at some kind of reforms. I said this in a committee earlier today. I think everybody agrees that we need to do some reform. It just depends on, you know, what reform we're talking about and how quickly. Most of what we're trying to do, the premium relief would come for people that are looking at the 2017 calendar year, so we try to help people out this year. The relief, or the changes that we're trying to make in law, we're trying to do something to, I mean, if bad things happen this year to the individual insurance market, the things that happen this year, we want to make sure this doesn't even get worse in 2018. And we're trying to get some reforms in here that would, we hope, make the individual insurance market in Minnesota more attractive for insurers next year. And I can be happy to answer questions or go into a little bit more detail about specifics if people want me to. Otherwise, we can get people to come up and testify. And Mr. Chair, I don't know exactly what we do about Representative Hillstrom's questions. If Mr. Neumeister's not here and other people that had specific questions, you know, if we want to hear, I don't know if Commissioner Franz is coming, but if he wants to talk about some of the issues that they have with civil law related issues related to data privacy, we could either try to find them, or I don't know how technically we could work this, if we could hold this amendment, and I don't know, I leave that up to the chair or up to staff as to how we handle that.
Great. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I actually just texted to see where the commissioner was. He's actually testifying in HHS in the Senate at this moment, and so as soon as he finishes, he was planning to come over. But let me just quickly lay out some of the issues that kind of came up. So one of the issues that came up this morning is that basically what this proposal included in the amendment does is it says that there's going to be a means testing before any of the relief goes out. And some of the testimony that we heard is that the department would have to first collect the data to show that the person who's applying has insurance. So it would be the first data set that would be collected by the department. The second set would be to find out if their federal income tax information, if they are eligible in order to get this information. So you'd be collecting federal income tax information. Then there would be a residency, proving that you actually have residency, and so there would be information collected from the Department of Revenue and deed. And so basically what's happening then is you have this eligibility criteria, and so you're basically creating this massive database. And they attempted to create some data classification so that your information wouldn't be public. But if the way the Data Practices Act works is if government collects the data, unless you change the classification of it, the public gets to get it. And so if you collect all this information and don't make these changes, then anyone can call up and say, hey, I'd like to get all the data that you have on anybody who's getting a tax credit. And any information they collected would have to be public. So that was the attempt to regulate in civil law. How can you protect that data? The problem was the commissioner testified they don't want to collect this data. They would rather just do the straight rebate because it will take 100 people to review those applications, and then what happens if some people are ineligible. So those are some of the testimony that started to come out, and I would think that you would care, because if 100 staff are going to be taken, I would bet that that might be an issue for this committee to consider.
Chairman Hoppe?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, I have said this in every committee we've been on. I think I said it on the House floor. I'll say it again. This is a work in progress. One way or the other, if we do the governor's plan or we do this, we are going to have to pay to set up a database and to have somebody do this. Either our consumers are paying, our constituents are paying, or we're using taxpayer dollars, but somehow we're going to have to set up a mechanism to do this. My goal here is to get this bill, to give it the hearings that we're going through right now, and get the bill to conference committee and figure out, ultimately, we have to have a bill that we can pass in the House and that the Senate can pass and that the governor will sign. And I'm willing to keep working with everybody involved, including the governor's administration, and try to get something that we think that the governor will go ahead and sign.
I think what we'll do, Chairman Hoppe, is I think we'll get into public testimony so the public can weigh in here, and then we will go into members' questions. But I'd like to get through, and if the folks that are testifying could stick around so we could get through all the folks, and then if various members have questions for certain people, we can call them back down. So let's start with Bentley Graves, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And for the record, sir, if you could state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm the Director of Healthcare and Transportation Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And
welcome to the Commerce Committee.
Thank you. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here today and to offer some comments about House File 1. You know, I'll start by saying, you know, typically the individual market isn't something that most folks think that the business community has any interest in. You know, generally they think of, you know, the group market, self-insured market, but the individual market is where folks who are self-employed go to find insurance. I mean, increasingly it's also a place where small businesses who have been able to keep up with the rate increase in the small group market have been more or less forced to go with their employees with various kinds of defined contribution arrangements. So, you know, we've heard from a lot of our members since the rates were released in October that this is something that was going to be a significant burden for them and their employees, and so we appreciate the committee, the House, the legislature, the governor working quickly to put together this premium support package. It's very much needed for 2017, and we appreciate the quick work on it. Beyond that, though, there are also some pieces in here that will help those small employers who are still in the small group market. We have not seen the kind of difficulties, I guess, in the small group market that we have recently with the individual market. But for this year, small group market saw double-digit increases again. And that's on top of, you know, some pretty significant increases in the past years, resulting, unfortunately, in the small group market just in the last 2 years shrinking by about a third. So we appreciate the work that's been done to include a couple important small business provisions in this bill, first of which is to make it easier for small employers to self-insure, bringing Minnesota's laws closer in line with what's found in most other states. Minnesota statute, as it currently stands, requires all employers, and particularly small employers, to take on a much more financial risk to explore the option of self-insuring than they would have to in most other states. And while the provision that's here is by no means a silver bullet that would fix all the problems in the small group market or for all small employers, it certainly goes a long way to help those who would otherwise be able to explore self-insuring as an option for themselves and their employees. We also appreciate the language that was added to make sure that Minnesota's law conforms with new legislation just passed at the federal level to make it easier for small employers to do pre-tax defined contribution arrangements. I mentioned that this is something we're seeing more and more with particularly small employers, but up until action taken by Congress in December, this is something that had to be done in an after-tax basis. So both those small employers and the individuals that work for them, you know, were basically paying a penalty to use this as an option to help themselves get insurance. So we appreciate the fact that language is added to make sure that Minnesota small businesses can take advantage of this this important new tool. And finally, we also are supportive of the directive to the Department of Commerce to explore some of these new insurance market options, which you know, could also bring about some benefit for small employers who are still in the small group market. So I'm happy to answer any questions. Again, very, very much appreciate the quick work on this, and look forward to being part of this conversation as the legislation moves forward.
Thank you. I think we'll hold off with questions. Members will get to ask questions. If you could, testifiers could stick around here. But just real quickly on the issue of, I think on the tax conformity bill, House File 2, we took care of the issue from the Obama bill, or that he signed in December 13th, I think. I think we conform to that.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. So the tax conformity bill took care of kind of the tax piece, so that, you know, if and when small employers did this, they and their employees could realize the benefits on a pre-tax basis. This piece is more kind of on the mechanic side to make sure that regulatorily small businesses can functionally access individual health insurance for their employees in a subsidized way.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. We'll go to Mr. Mike Hickey, the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mike Hickey, National Federation of Independent Business, and thanks for the chance to make a few comments. We are the most affected group by this bill, and really appreciate Representative Hoppe bringing this bill forward to try to bring some desperately needed relief to people. We have a lot of our members in the individual market. We have 11,000 members. I think there's been some migration or flight, Mr. Chairman, since the federal health care law has passed, and all the headaches and problems it's caused people. So I think some of the people in the group market have migrated into the individual market. And so this is really needed. People are getting devastating increases. They're getting their networks narrowed. Some people are losing ability to see a doctor, an oncologist, while they're very sick. And so a lot of dire situations surround this. I think everybody realizes that. And hopefully we're going to do something quickly to help people. And we really are cleaning up the mess caused by the federal health care law. And that law may go away in the next few months, too, as you know. So really appreciate what we're trying to do here. We also strongly support the stop-loss provision. It's harder for a small employer to consider reinsurance, to consider self-insurance in this state. And this is going to, we're taking a step to get a lot closer to what other states do with the attachment point at $10,000. It's going to make it more affordable. I don't think people need to fear there's going to be a huge migration of people out of the state-regulated market into stop-loss, but small employers need options. And those that want to spend money and put financial risk on the line to help their employees ought to be rewarded, and this is going to help. So we really appreciate that. We appreciate the provision that conforms with the federal 21st Century Cures Act. That's another option to allow small employers to help their employees purchase an individual policy when buying a group one just isn't doable. And right now with the federal health care law, there's a lot of reasons why it's not doable. So that's another option for people, and we really appreciate it. Importantly, that law that passed also removed a penalty. Small employers were penalized if they were doing that prior to the law passing. So it was refreshing to see that the current Congress and President Obama could get together on that change, because people were actually being penalized for doing that just a month ago or so. So anyways, overall, we appreciate what you're doing here, and this needs to be done.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. If you could please stick around, some members may have questions. It's my intention to just go down the list that I've been provided with here, with the exception of if Commissioner Franz would arrive, we would finish up the person that's talking and then go right to the commissioner. And also, I'm just going to go down the list here. I've got next to Don Exposito, if you could please come down. Catherine Commit, Mary Krinke, Commissioner Franz, whenever he gets here, Mr. Paul Sobosinski, Matt Flanders, possibly David Renner. Is there anyone else that I, yes, Chair Hoppe.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure, but if we have anybody that's traveled a distance to get here, we might want to run them to the head of the line.
Sure. Let's first of all see who else would like to testify on this bill as amended. Commissioner Rothman, certainly, yes. And Commissioner, does it matter which order you're in, or you're okay? Anyone else? Did I see any other hands? Just to get an idea. Okay, thank you very much. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Dominic Spizzetto. I represent the Minnesota Independent Insurance Agents Association and also the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors. two insurance agents organizations that write insurance throughout the state.
Welcome to committee, sir.
Thank you, sir. This is my favorite committee to appear before.
Second. Taxes is first. Favorite. Okay.
He's got the gavel right now.
It's the favorite.
I forgot where I was.
Okay.
I'm also here today representing an organization called the Agents Coalition for Healthcare Reform, which includes two other agents associations, the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters and the Professional Insurance Agents Association of Minnesota. And together, these four organizations represent about 6,000 insurance professionals throughout the state. As insurance professionals, we are in the front line of what we see as the collapse of our individual health insurance market. And we're very concerned about the direction that it goes. And we understand there are probably short-term fixes, which are immediate and necessary, and perhaps long-term fixes that are necessary to get it to where we have premiums that people can purchase again. I'm here specifically to support and endorse the idea of the premium assistance program. We have seen insurance premiums double, triple over the last two or three years for many of your constituents and our clients. We've seen couples in their 60s paying $3,000 a month for health insurance, plus throw on a $6,500 deductible. And they're looking at what they've expended over the last several years and find out they don't spend that much on health care. So the question is to us, why should I buy health insurance? And we don't have a really great answer other than you should. And if everybody drops out of the market, it only gets worse. And you could have a catastrophic expense that needs to be covered. Some people buy that, others aren't, and they're going without health insurance. So we think this premium assistance thing could really help my agents and your constituents try and figure out how to pay for health insurance. I'd like to also speak in support of the continuity of care provisions that are in here, primarily because it's just common sense, because of the limitations of the markets that we've seen and the networks being restricted, that there are people out there who have been seeing their healthcare professional for years and years, that may be ongoing acute treatment, and more importantly, they may have some disorders that have been carried over for a long period of time. I can think of psychiatric disorders which require certain types of medication and therapy. It's virtually impossible in some cases to find a provider with the background and knowledge of the provider you had because the networks are so restricted. We think it's a good idea to help pay for that, and especially as we get into terminal illness, people in their last 6 months of life are considered in hospice or in situations where we're just trying to make them comfortable, and suddenly you change your plans and you move somewhere else, and that's a real burden on the individual, but as well as the family that is sitting and watching their family member pass on. So I would like you to look at that as well. From our perspective, we believe that healthcare reform is a long and windy road, and it's going to take a lot of effort both on your part and the federal government to figure out where we go next. However, the premium situation that we experience now in the individual market is a giant pothole in the middle of that road. And unless we fill that pothole and cover it over and move on to the next steps, we can't go anywhere else. So I would really encourage you to advance this premium assistance program as soon as possible and make it as easy as possible. And frankly, the sooner the better. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Professor Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony. So my question to you is you have indicated that the premium assistance is the most important, and I agree with you. The question is, do you have a preference or an opinion on the governor's proposal versus this proposal for that premium assistance? Because it's my understanding that the governor's proposal would get that premium assistance out within a couple of months, and that this proposal would have no premium assistance be issued until approximately 2018.
Mr. Spezzetto.
Representative Hillstrom, Mr. Chairman, our coalition has not taken a position on either of those, but our position is the quicker the better, and the simpler the better, and I'll let you determine which one meets that criteria.
Thank you.
Professor Hillstrom.
That was good.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Spezzetto. And again, members, we'll all be able to question the folks that have testified here. Ms. Krenke, Mary Krenke. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Mary Trinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. And just like to say we're very pleased that this bill is moving forward. I'd also like to say that the Minnesota Hospital Association is very appreciative of the funding source, and no one has mentioned that yet. We are very pleased that the funding source is the general fund and not the healthcare access fund. That is very important to our members. The large surplus that is currently in the healthcare access fund is primarily due to federal money, with Minnesota Care being our basic health plan, and obviously that is subject to potential significant changes at the federal level. So we are very anxious about the use of the healthcare access fund and very pleased that this bill uses the general fund. So thank Representative Hoppe and the other members who have worked on this legislation. I just want to draw one thing to your attention. A number of us in the provider community have been working with Representative Hoppe and other members of the committee and other co-authors on Section 11 regarding what is called the unauthorized provider services. This is commonly referred to as surprise billing. Some of us refer to it as surprise denial. And this is when there's an out-of-network provider that does provide services. And so we continue to work on the language that is in the bill as of now. I know Representative Hoppe is committed to continue to work on this. I just would like to say that we are in favor of doing something that prevents the consumer from having a surprise bill that maybe they were not anticipating, because they went to an in-network hospital but then did receive specialty services from an out-of-network provider. So we're going to continue to work on this and look forward to doing so.
Okay, Chair Hoppe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this might be a good time to interject. We will keep working on that, surprise billing, other kinds of – I mean, this is a moving target. This is not going to be the final bill. We're going to keep working with everybody we can on – surprise billing and a lot of other things in here, civil law provisions and other things. So good time to interject that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Krinke. Next is Commissioner Hellstrom. Could you wait?
Sure.
Please. Thank you. Okay. Next is Commissioner Franz, who I believe is still over in the Senate. We'll go to him when he gets here. Mr. Paul Sobosinski, Minnesota Land Stewardship Project, sir. You could join us, and then it'll be Matt Flanders, David Renner, Commissioner Rothman. Yes. Okay. Just so members know, here we're going to visit here with Mr. Sobosinski, Mr. Flanders, Renner, Commissioner, not Renner. Renner, you going to testify?
Yeah.
Okay, he's on. Okay, wonderful. Okay, then Commissioner Rothman, and then we'll open up for questions for members. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
My name is Paul Sobosinski. I'm with the Land Stewardship Project. I'm also a livestock farmer from Wabasso, Minnesota. Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, appreciate the opportunity to testify here today.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. Our organization has about a third of our members who are farmers, about a third who are rural, and about another third who are throughout the rest of the state. Our organization has been engaged in the issue of health care for about the last 7 years because it's such a big issue to farmers and to small business people and to other rural Minnesotans. The individual market may represent about 5% of all Minnesotans out in outstate Minnesota, it's a much higher number. And it really affects our members and affects farmers. And the reason I'm here today is because of that concern. I believe this is a real crisis. I'd like to say it's like, you know, you're picking up the telephone and you're calling 911 as it relates to farmers in outstate Minnesota in terms of what's happening with their health care premiums. And I believe that the most important step is to get some immediate relief out there right now. Now, I know there's two different methods being offered forward here. You know, the proposal that you're working on, Representative Hoppe, and the governor's proposal. And I hope that somehow that people come together and get to a solution here and get the relief out here now, because it's well past due. So I would appreciate that moving forward just as quick as possible and ask for that to happen. I also want to testify a little bit about some of the concerns that I have with the bill in terms of reform. I think some of the ideas that you're talking about and looking at in terms of reform, Representative Hoppe and others who have been involved in it, are important to look at and examine. But I would ask you to take careful consideration as you look at some of those reforms. And one of those reforms that I have some caution about is, for example, the proposal to allow for-profit insurance companies to be engaged in health care and replace our nonprofit status that we now require in the state. And I would urge some caution about doing that and some real thoughtful consideration about that due to a number of reasons. One, I think that if you're going to look at that issue, you need to examine carefully why we got to this stage with the nonprofits. We need to look at the issue of reserves, the amount of reserves they have on hand. I thought one of the real telling things this summer, and I was really disappointed early on when the issue started to surface back in July and August when I saw some of this was happening, that the big concern was about the profits of the insurance companies. Well, I think the big concern should be about the fact that many Minnesotans are facing premiums way above their ability to pay. For example, some of the stories that we faced in our organization, we called, we talked with a number of farmers, been in touch with a number of farmers, many who are members. For example, like in southeast Minnesota, one example I'd like to refer to is, and they testified before the committee that was involved in terms of looking at the health care finance committee that was put together a couple years ago by this legislature and was convened in November. And their names were Mike and Jennifer Ruprecht from Lewiston, Minnesota. For example, as farmers, they received a 76% increase from Medica. They expect their premiums to pay $22,224 for coverage in 2017 with a $12,800 deductible. Well, in my ball game as a farmer, that's not health care. That's not insurance. You've got no protection at all. And what I've run from time to time when I'm talking with farmers is the people who are struggling trying to pay these premiums. And a lot of people faced 40% increase in premiums last year that were farmers. Very often, when people are on the edge or close to the edge, what they find is they either got the money to pay the insurance or the money to pay the doctor. They ain't got both. And so when people are paying the insurance, trying to hang together, and Representative Davids, you and I talked about this earlier, if you don't protect the farm, you could lose it all. And so people are doing that, and they're putting off health care. That's going to cost us all more money. That's why we need to address this. That's why this is a crisis. In terms of some of the other reforms, in terms of what I mentioned about the nonprofit status, about being careful about that, I hope you seriously look at that, carefully examine that piece. I do think there's other merits that you talked about in your bill. I'm glad you're looking at that, and I hope that you find a way to move forward. The one other piece as relates to the nonprofit status, that if you're looking at making that shift, I guess the question that I think that needs to be answered, if you have insurance, nonprofit insurance companies that have on reserves, for example, I believe Blue Cross Blue Shields is somewhere in that relationship of was $1.5 billion, that you'd ask the question, whose money is that? It's from, I think, from two sources, people's premiums and also come from some of the government programs like Minnesota Care. So you have to ask the question, so who's going to get that money now? So I want to raise that. I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I thank you for that opportunity, Representative Davids, and I appreciate the fact that you're looking forward in terms of how you can move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sobosinski. We'll now move, and Mr. Sobosinski, you and I have talked a lot about this, and I really thank you for your strong involvement in this issue and your organizations. We'll next go to David Renner. And Mr. Sobosinski, if you could stick around, there may be some questions. And Mr. Renner, I have Dr. David Renner. Are you what kind of doctor?
My dreams, Mr. Chairman. No, I am not. Mr. Chairman, members, Dave Renner, representative of the Medical Association. So I represent physicians. I play one on TV at times, but I am not a physician.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. The MMA represents over 10,000 physicians, medical students, and physicians in training. I'm also here on behalf today of the Minnesota Radiological Society, Minnesota Society of Anesthesiologists, the Minnesota Society of Pain Physicians, and the Minnesota Orthopedic Society. First of all, I also want to commend all of your work for trying to address the issue of premium increases, and we would also encourage you to move as quickly as possible to get that passed to try to address the crisis that has been created by these large increases. But I also want to shift focus and talk about Article 2 and the same sections that Ms. Krenke raised, sections 11 and 12 of Article 2, dealing with this unanticipated billings. The language is in there now, and we appreciate Representative Hoppe's comments because we strongly oppose the language in there now. We have been working with Representative Hoppe and his staff to try to find some alternatives. We understand the need to protect consumers if they are receiving services for what they believe are in-network services, and there happens to be some of those providers who are out-of-network. But the way that the language is drafted now, we have real concerns that this shifts the balance in negotiations between healthcare practitioners and health plans. And we are nervous that this would result in potentially more and more narrow networks and less practitioners being included in health plan networks. You need to know that there are many reasons why physicians are not, and other healthcare practitioners are not, part of health plan networks. In some cases, it's because the health plan does not invite the practitioner in. We have many practitioners, physicians, and others that would like to be in networks, but for a number of reasons have not been allowed to participate. In many cases, it's just because the contracts that are offered are unworkable, and in some cases, because we don't have enough supply throughout the state. So, again, I would caution you with the language that's in there. Again, Representative Hoppe has indicated a willingness to work. We will continue to work with that. Our ultimate goal, we believe, is to try to hold patients harmless in those situations where they don't have a choice over who maybe their anesthesiologist or their radiologist is. But again, the way it's drafted now, there are some real problems. We have provided some language that looks at some national databases, that looks at the use of usual and customary, that seems to be well respected in other states, and we will keep working with that language. So with that, Mr. Chair and members, I'd be happy to answer questions.
And we will hold off on that. Thank you, Mr. Renner. Okay, our last testifier until Commissioner Franz gets here, and it's my intention to go and hear from Commissioner Rothman at this point, if you could, sir. And then we will go into member questions. When Commissioner Franz does show up, we will get him on the docket right away. So Commissioner Rothman, if you could please, Chair Hoppe. Okay. If you could please state your name and who represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike Rothman, the Commissioner of Commerce for the State of Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. It's good to be back, and Happy New Year, everybody. And I want to say this. Commissioner Franz and I are kind of a team. He's going to comment specifically on some of the items that are in Article 1 in his jurisdiction. I'll talk. We both talk at a very high level about some of the same things. And then I'll delve into a little bit of Article 2, just at a very high level in terms of what our thoughts are out of the gate. First of all, let me just say this. The governor's goal in developing his health insurance subsidy proposal was and is to provide immediate relief to Minnesotans, many of whom have already paid for their first insurance premium. Again, many have already paid their first insurance premium, and there are thousands more who are out there trying to make a decision as to whether or not they are going to participate in the 2017 marketplace. And there is a lot of uncertainty, and they need clarity as soon as possible in order to understand what they should do. I want to also be clear that the governor and us as commissioners are very eager to work with the legislature and Minnesotans, health plans, and others to develop the longer-term solutions to the marketplace, meaning specifically the reforms that are not rate relief, nor individual market reforms that are being proposed, but that are actually the ones for 2018. Our focus, the governor's focus, is to address the issues in the 2017 marketplace first and to do those on an expedited fashion. As you all know, the governor proposed to do immediate rate relief as soon as possible in October, and to do it in a simple fashion and to get it into the marketplace so that we could stabilize the marketplace. We could tell the consumers exactly how much they would get. It was simple, 25% reduction in the premium. It goes on their bill. There's no back-end mechanics in terms of income verification and testing or anything like that. Commissioner Franz can address all the mechanics of all that, but let me just say at a very high level, and looking at the pros and cons of in determining, is it important to get immediate relief into the 2017 marketplace versus delay? So, for example, we looked at early on a tax credit. Should there be a tax credit? Well, a tax credit is a delay, and that doesn't get into people's pockets for quite a long time. Doesn't help with their decisions in the marketplace. And so the goal for and the proposal that was made was to be as simple as possible to get the relief as possible in the pockets of folks. I just want to turn back the clock a few weeks, months to what I had said when we announced the situation, when I stood in front and told the public what was happening. I'll reiterate it. The 2017 marketplace is in a dire circumstance. When Blue Cross and Blue Shield decided to pull out of the marketplace in June of this last year, it put the marketplace into severe jeopardy. When the health plans, the other health plans, all told me they would withdraw, all of them, as a result, from the marketplace, we were faced with no marketplace whatsoever. So the way I look at it is that a patient was delivered to me that had no pulse, that its body, its systems were in failure. And the Department of Commerce worked with the health insurance plans to put back the marketplace, to get something back in place for 2017 so that we could get by in 2017. It wasn't, and I've said this, we've said this, Governor said this, it isn't the best of all worlds, but we have a marketplace. I view the marketplace in an emergency situation. It hasn't gotten any better. And every day that goes by since the governor proposed rate relief is a day that is costing the marketplace. It's actually continuing to destabilize. And if we don't get the reforms in place to stabilize the marketplace, that this is the number one fix, the first fix that has to happen to the individual marketplace. The rest of it can come. We can work on reforms as we go forward. Because if we don't get the relief in place for people to make their decisions by at now and through the end of the month, those are lost opportunities. People will not be in the marketplace, and we will be left with an enrollment number which is significantly less than what it was last year. It will be significantly less than what it was last year. And so the way I look at it is that we can't get the individual marketplace as a patient up to the operating room for 2018 until we get the infusion, like a blood infusion, into the marketplace now. I see it as an emergency. It was and has been. And we should be working in a bipartisan fashion. I know we've talked about that, to be able to do that, and that's what we hope to do. It is, in my mind, much like we were in the propane crisis in 2013. We all said, as a bipartisan fashion, we'll address the emergency. Let's do that first. Let's get that done. And then we'll talk about what we do next. Let me then also say, or address Article 2. And I know that Commissioner Franz will delve into Article 1 and explain the differences between the governor's proposal a little bit and what this proposal does in terms of its mechanics. So quickly on Article, let me just say on Article 2, I view all of these things as non-emergency items, that they don't need to be done now, that there are some in here that may be workable, but there are some we have opposed, the administration has opposed, and there are some that are, for example, many of the small group marketplace do not address the emergency in 2017. They may or may not affect 2018 in stabilizing the marketplace, and in some instances may actually destabilize the individual marketplace by the changes that are made to the small group marketplace. On Section 1, this is the public notification, the 10 days. This will impact the plans because we would require them to comply with formatting requirements, and there may be pros and cons to allowing insurers to see their competitors' rates earlier. But what this does is, currently in last year, the rates were made public in August. What this would do would move that date forward to roughly in the June timeframe. And there are many pros and cons to allowing insurers to see their competitors' rates. But this all has just as much chance of increasing rates as it would to lower the rates. In Article 2, Sections 2 and 3, this provision is the stop-loss provision. We have talked about this proposal for the last 2 years. Again, it will provide zero premium assistance to Minnesotans who buy their own insurance and will not help stabilize the individual market going forward. On its merits, the proposal picks winners and losers among small businesses in your districts. It undermines consumer protections that are in place in Minnesota's laws and as well under the ACA. It takes Minnesota out of compliance with the NAIC Model Act and actuarial recommendations in this area, and potentially destabilizes the small group market by creating adverse selection. Ask yourselves, why would we want to create instability in the small group market at a moment where it has been very stable compared to the individual market we are trying to stabilize? Now, other states have looked at this stop loss proposal, the specific issue we have here. And Maryland issued a comprehensive report October 3rd, 2016. Both red states and blue states have looked at this issue, and the NAIC last studied it in 2015. But red and blue state legislatures have done the opposite of what this proposal is today. California increased its individual attachment point to $40,000, Colorado to $20,000, D.C., Washington, D.C. is $40,000, Maryland put theirs at $22,500, and New Jersey put theirs at $25,000. The reason why states are adjusting the attachment point upward is due to the rise in health costs since the NAIC model law was first written over a decade ago. $20,000 does not cover as many health care procedures as it did at that time, just roughly. And again, the department has proposed actually increasing the attachment point to be consistent with some of the movements of these states. On sections 4 through 9, this is the change to allow for-profit HMOs in the state of Minnesota. Now, we all know that this has been a tradition to only have a tradition in Minnesota's market to have nonprofit requirements for HMOs to sell in Minnesota's insurance marketplace. So this is a drastic change. It overturns Minnesota's long-standing requirement that HMOs are prohibited from making profits on health insurance sales. Now, I also say this, and I'd invite any insurance plan to come forward. I'd ask the plans around the country, every single one of them, United Healthcare and any others, would they come into the individual market in Minnesota as it is today? I'd ask that question. And we all know that around the country, United Healthcare in the majority of states, nearly all of them, pulled out of their individual markets around the country. So just because we throw this tradition down or eliminate it doesn't solve the individual market crisis whatsoever. Sections 11 and 12 are balanced billing and surprise billing provisions. Now, the Department of Health focuses a lot on this. I have publicly stated, and we will continue to say this, that balanced and surprise billings are terrible to consumers. This is a serious problem, and it's a serious problem around the country. In fact, I have spoken at the NAIC in the health insurance committees and said, we need to fix this across the country. But the most important point here is that these two sections do not seem to even work together in conjunction with themselves, and we will continue to need to work on those issues. Section 13, the revised continuity of care concept, is only for 2017, and it has some serious significant problems with it because of that. Establishing continuity of care requirements prospectively, meaning going forward, so that an insurer leaving all or part of Minnesota must take into their financial calculus taking care of their sickest patients for 120 days, does make sense. But the problem is this provision is only for 2017, and so it's only retroactive. And what it does is, even if you look at it from a legal perspective, it totally changes the contracts and the plans that were filed by the health insurance companies for 2017 and tells them, hey, go back, redo this. And in fact, many of them haven't priced for this kind of concept. So that's a significant problem. There are some other problems. It doesn't establish consumer appeal rights that need to be handled. These are details, things that, again, we say this needs to be done in a smart way, vetted properly, in an appropriate context, and full discussion. On Section 15, given the time frame for reporting to the legislature department, we conduct these studies, and these are the studies provisions of how to improve things. Let me just say this, that what has been proposed would not be comprehensive enough to address the individual market situation. And then I'd say verifying whether individual market purchasers meet legal residency requirements or having the Department of Commerce does that really doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make sense to me. As well as whether individual resides in a geographic rating area in which they apply for coverage. To me, that should be policed, or at least that's a question that should be the health insurers doing that, not the Department of Commerce. Let's not have government do that. Lastly, on the flexible benefit plans, where they were an option available to small group employers in Minnesota until 2010, and to employers up to 100 since 2010. That would allow employers to waive nearly all required benefits in order to offer plans to employees that minimize costs. Now, this again is a proposal out there. We haven't had the ability to look at whether we totally agree with this or not. And then lastly, I did skip the 21st century one. You know, that did pass. I don't want to say we're going to look into that and we'll have an open dialogue. Let me just close with this again and come back to the main point. This is an emergency situation in 2017. We should treat it as such. Let's get the infusion of the relief, premium relief, now, and not hang it up with all these other issues. And if we're not focused on the individual marketplace, what are we telling Minnesotans about how we're addressing the marketplace? That's why the governor's proposal is absolutely critical. Again, I liken it to the propane crisis. We should all be working in a bipartisan fashion. I know we're all working together on this, but let's do it and let's get this done first. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I think we are working on a bipartisan basis on this. That's why we're here. I would say I'd like to call Commissioner Franz down, but while he's coming down, Commissioner Rothman, you said we have to have these reforms for 18. We have to have these reforms, yet the governor proposes nothing. So I think what we need to do, it's interesting to me that with the governor's proposal, and we're looking at everything, we're going to be working on a bipartisan basis, but so you get some money out there, but in the district I represent, there's no all access plans available. They have nothing to go to, so you throw money at it, but you got nowhere to go. Most of my district has lost, as in many districts, has lost their doctors, they've lost their clinics, they've lost their hospitals. They're already gone. And so if you have a 40% increase last year, 67% this year, that's 107%. And you give a 25% reduction, you still have a 75% increase. So, yes, it's that the relief will be much cherished and much needed and wanted. But we got a lot of work to do because this just really scrapes the surface out. So, Commissioner Franz, you're down here. Welcome. I was just filling there. I didn't see you. So welcome to the committee. And maybe, Commissioner Rothman, maybe you could pull a chair up and stay here, because I think what I'll do is when Commissioner Franz has made his statements, I think we'll have committee members ask questions of the two commissioners first, and then we'll go into questions for other folks that have testified. And I have my list here. I have Hillstrom, Luna, and Nash for after. Oh, Halvers. Okay. So we will get all the member questions in that we can. Welcome the committee, sir. And if you could please present your testimony, and we do want to work to get some things done here because we really have to. Welcome, committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Myron France, Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget. I understand that Chair Hoppe, you selected Chair Davis to take the gavel.
He just took it.
Oh, that's interesting.
I didn't ask any questions.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure who I'm dealing with here. Thank you very much. I know you've been working really hard today and in the spirit of getting things done. That's clearly why I'm here today, is to convey, as Commissioner Rothman has, is our interest in getting something done right away. And let me just jump right into this issue, and I think you've talked a little bit about some of the data practices issues in this committee and making some adjustments in the prior committee. One of the concerns we have is about the data practices or the data sets that we would have been incorporating into House File 1. So we believe that the better way to provide premium relief is to not collect all the data. So, you know, briefly, the governor's plan to provide the 25% premium relief on the invoice between the insurance plan and the insured is the best way, the most efficient way, to track premium and premium relief. This, and under that scenario, we don't have to collect information. We don't have to send out thousands of checks to thousands of people every month. And we understand that it doesn't have the income limitation that's in House File 1. We struggled with that, too. Our first plans were to come up with a system that would have had an income testing, but we could not come up with a way to get it done soon enough in 2017. Obviously, as a chair of the tax committee, we thought about a tax credit that might work for folks as well. But once again, that was relief wouldn't show up to these people until 2018 if we gave them relief in 2017. So the goal was, how can we quickly provide real-time premium relief to people, especially in January, before January 31st, because we have people who are paying premiums now. And we think there are thousands of people who are out there who are trying to decide, can I afford this or can I not? And that 25% can make the difference for a lot of people. And that's why we believe that the simplicity, the understandability of a 25% rebate, the ability of the plans to incorporate this into their invoice system in a matter of several months, is the reason to go with the governor's plan rather than incorporating a new data system and a new income test. I'll just kind of close by talking, so we can get to questions. I'll close by just mentioning the constellation of components we feel we have to build at MMB to implement House File 1, and the first one being the web application system. Obviously, we have to have, instead of recognizing the invoice, we'd have to have each insured make an application to MMB, and we'd have to collect their date of birth, their social security numbers, and a bunch of data. Then we'd have to make sure we cross-match that with the health plans and to see if they're the same people. Then we have to turn around and figure out a way to do the residency test. So have that data set talk with revenue or deed to determine whether they're residents. And then we've got to turn around and have that data set talk to the federal hub to determine the marginal adjusted gross income to whether they qualify or they're excluded. The difficulty with that is that Minsure has a portal to that hub, and that's how they're able to test income and find out if people qualify for the federal tax credit. We would have to create a new portal, a separate one, and we've been talking to the IRS, and we're not convinced we can get that permission anytime soon. Obviously, they're very protective of how many portals they have into the federal tax information system. So that's just another complicating factor. We believe it could take up to 2 hours per application to process, to make sure it gets through. Remember, this is a monthly thing that we have to go through to make sure to verify that they're still the insureds. And, you know, if you had 100,000 applications and you'd spent 2 hours, that's 200,000 hours. That's 100 people to process these applications. That's just for processing the applications. We'd have to create an audit trail. So if we're utilizing the invoice system, we have to verify with the plans that those people actually paid their invoices. But they already checked their residency. So right now the plans have to find out to make sure that the people buying the insurance are where they say they are, because the plans vary by location how much you pay. So they're already engaged in that process. We can use that as an income kind of a test. So creating an audit trail for the OLA or Commerce or whoever we decide to do the audit after the fact is something we have to do, so this data has to live in a way that you can easily go back and trace all the steps and make sure that they were properly taken. So we're really asking to see if we can come up with a way to do this that doesn't involve writing all these checks, creating this data system, creating these different components to talk to one another, and instead coming up with a system that recognizes that transaction that's out there. Let's use the real-time transaction that we think reduces fraud dramatically. I mean, just think about it. How many people are we going to have fraud cases when they're buying insurance? What's the worst thing that's going to happen? They're going to get cheaper insurance. So, I mean, they're clearly buying insurance. And so if they got the federal tax credit, we'd want to make sure that they didn't double dip. So we would check on that. But otherwise, if the insurance plan is selling insurance to Myron Franz and I pay my premium, I bought something. And there's no opportunity for me to seek cash from the state to try to represent that transaction. So anyway, to make things short, we're concerned about the process and how long it might take. We've been talking to people in the private sector, and we're working on the fiscal note. I'm sorry it's not done yet. This is not an easy fiscal note to write. We've talked to people in the private sector. We've tried to figure out how would they do it, how much time would it take. We believe we should put out an RFP. We don't want to create another system that doesn't work, that people are not have confidence in.
Excuse me, sir. I believe Commissioner Rothman has to get over to the Senate. So, okay, we'll be back. Now, members, it's my intention to let Commissioner Franz wrap up, go to questions for Commissioner Franz, then questions for members for others, and we will vote on this at 5 o'clock. So, and this is a long process. This is not the final vote on this bill, obviously. And Commissioner Rothman?
Senator Benson just asked if I could run over there, and I'll come back.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Franz?
Mr. Chair, no, thank you all for being so flexible today. A lot of you have been flexible in letting us move around on this. I think that what I'd like to just finish by saying is, if you compare the simplicity and the directness of the governor's plan to get these rebates or these premium relief out quickly, it outweighs the idea of limiting it to certain people above a certain income level. So we believe that the best way is to proceed as quickly as we can, get this proposal up and running, and as Commissioner Rothman said, and none of you have talked to the governor, have you heard him say he is all about reform for 2018. He will listen to any ideas, any suggestions, but does believe that's step two, and would like to see step one be premium relief now. So I'm happy to take questions. Thank you.
And thank you, Commissioner Franz. I'm going to have Chair Hoppe, if you have any comments on House File 1, ask them at this point, or we'll get into questions.
I think we can go right into questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So for Commissioner Franz, I have Hillstrom, Lunan, Nash, Halverson, and Slocum, and then we will add folks, and then if we have questions for other folks that have testified, we will go there. So, and again, it's my intention to have a vote by 5 at the end of the committee here. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, if you could just tell me, if we go with the governor's plan, when would people see the rebate? And if we go with the plan that's before us right now, when would people see the relief?
Mr. Chair and Representative,
Commissioner
Frank. Our belief is that we're actually coming up on a deadline. January, the 15th of every month is a billing cycle issue, so we're maybe going to miss another billing cycle, but if we were to pass the governor's bill today, we could see the invoice system in place in 2 months and 3 at the maximum. So they would be getting their relief on their invoices in 2 months and maybe 3. Under the House File 1 process, as we understand it, and we're trying to figure out how to implement it, we do not believe until we do an RFP, a request for a proposal, and bring in some people to help us build this. We think that takes 6 months. We don't think we can get checks out until 2018.
Representative Hillstrom.
I think that covers it for me at this moment, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me?
I said I think that covers it for this.
Oh, for this. Okay, thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for coming again today. I was involved in a meeting with the plans, and we asked this very question of them, because the governor's plan would put an expectation on them or the onus on them to administrate a lot of this. And we were not told 2 months. We were told 7 to 8 months would be the quickest, regardless of which of the two plans we're looking at. So if, in fact, the January 18 number is that we're looking at a three-month difference on the rollout of this. The testifiers are all correct that it's important for us to do something and to set an expectation right away, because the people who will leave the market, the first people that will leave, will be the healthy ones. And all that's going to do is exasperate the problem that the Commerce Department has to deal with in 2018 and the plans, the reality of the plans. My concern with the governor's plan is, it looks a lot like your car makes a bad noise because there's something mechanically wrong with your car, and you simply go put more gas in it. Let's open the hood and start the reforms, because when the big move for the reforms come in later bills, the reforms that we put in now become the reality. Commissioner Rothman's testimony regarding stop losses, which would allow lower deductibles, what it would do is it would create an advantageous situation. He's exactly right. It'll create an advantageous situation for employers that have healthy employees. And in a lot of cases, they've created an environment or doing things to have their employees become healthier. And that when we go forward with other reforms, that very environment is the environment that we should be creating. The future of health care should be health. It should be staying out of having to go to the doctor or go to the hospital, and things that employers can do, individuals can do, and this would certainly be a step in that direction. One of the factors that bombed away on the individual market was when we allowed 26-year-olds to stay in their parents' plan. Now you had a big pool of very, very healthy, very young people that we weren't amateurizing the premiums over. So there's a lot of different forces at play here, but the reforms that come with House File 1 are all reforms that we will be doing, and we start them now. When the next move comes, we know that those realities are in place, so I think it's important to keep moving forward with this.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was for Commissioner Rothman, but I'll direct it to Mr. Franz. We heard that apparently the governor doesn't see continuity of care as an emergency situation, and yet there's 112,000 people who are going to be unable to see a doctor that they need to see. I think that's an emergency. And that's why it's important to take care of the bill the way it sits now and not wait for this to be dealt with. That's something that I think everyone would agree is an emergency. And yet we heard just a few minutes ago that it's not an emergency. We were told that whole clause is not an emergency situation. And yet tell that to the 112 people who can't go see their doctor. And is that the governor's position, is that that's not an emergency?
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do believe the governor has been clear. You're talking about the provision for 2017, continuity of care for 2017, correct? I do believe that he has been very concerned and understands that issue is a pressing issue. And I believe that's one of those areas we could come to agreement on at some point. I do think that he recognizes that, and so I appreciate your comments, and I think it's something we can talk about.
Representative Nash. Okay. Thank you. Representative Slocum, and then I'm going to go to Representative Halverson, who makes some comments or questions and then has an amendment to present, I believe. Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious about, and you mentioned it, Commissioner, about a fiscal note. The two plans seem quite different as far as what it would cost the government, if you will, to run the House File 1 as opposed to the governor's plan. Can you outline the fiscal differences briefly, kind of generically, I guess, because you said that the fiscal notes are not done?
Well, this is not a fiscal committee by any means, but if you have a short answer, Commissioner Grant.
Mr. Chair, most of my answers are not necessarily short, but they're always good.
They're always accurate, good, right? Yes.
But I'll do a short version, okay. Because I think for this committee.
I mean, this is not the fiscal committee.
No. What we've been struggling with, and I'm really honest about this, the fact that we're struggling with trying to figure out how do you put the web app, the application system in to interface with the plans, and then the application system to interface with revenue indeed and the income system, then creating a fraud system. So that sort of outlines a constellation. And then we've got just one other thing, we need to register those people with our integrated financial system for the state, because we have to send the checks out, a couple hundred thousand or 100,000 checks every month to these folks. And then we need to register them as vendors in the system because they're not in our system right now. So that's the constellation of the costs that we're looking at.
Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, then the auditor touches this too and does an audit on the implementation. And then a report has to be submitted. So that's going to add cost too. I have to say, I find it infinitely interesting that this House File 1 is a Republican bill. You don't want the government involved, and yet you want them up to their eyeballs in health care, which I find intriguing on a good day, and it floors me on a bad day. So I'm just, I don't get the, it's like we've flipped roles almost. And now then as I'm hearing different testimony, I'm thinking, okay, you know, if it were me and I wasn't lucky enough to have my state insurance, what if Minnesota people just pay 70% to 75% of their premiums until relief arrives? I mean, if it were me, I might try that.
I wouldn't try that.
Yeah, I would.
You're going to get canceled real quick.
Mr. Chair, oh, I'm
Mr. France.
I hate to do this in public, but I actually agree with Chair Davids. No, as I understand the normal agreement, if you don't pay the full premium, that's you're not on anymore. But that's my layman understanding.
Representative Slocum.
I just figures.
Okay. Now, Representative Halverson will ask questions, or do you want to introduce the amendment right now? And
Mr. Chair, if now's a good time, I think it'd be good to discuss the bring the amendment forward.
Okay, Representative Halverson moves the H0001DE2 amendment to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to Representative Hoppe for taking this issue on. It's a very heavy lift, and I think that we've heard a lot today that people are really solution focused, and I certainly bring this in that spirit. And also because it's such a heavy lift, I'd like to lighten the load a little bit. There's a lot in this bill that needs to be deeply, deeply vetted. We've already heard testimony about concerns of not only the fact that we have a destabilized individual market, but that we'd be moving potentially to destabilizing the small group market, which has actually been quite stable over the last couple of years. And so I think that we need to take the direction of first doing no harm in healthcare and taking on broad insurance changes that aren't haven't been thoroughly vetted on this quick path is very ill-advised, in my opinion. We have in my amendment, the governor's proposal, as we've heard the commissioners testify to, and this is a known proposal. It's been vetted for months. I know I went to meetings on some very hot days, so we've been at this for months and months and months trying to find a solution to get premium relief to the people in the individual market. It's a small group of people. It's about 125,000 statewide, and it's simple, it's direct, and it's immediate. The layers that we typically look at with government are gone because we're going to let the private sector help us solve this problem, and they are in a position and have committed to helping us solve this problem without putting additional costs onto the state. The people in my district aren't billionaires. I know means testing has been talked about a lot. It's something that has been of interest to a lot of us who have been looking at this proposal, making sure we're getting relief to the people who need it. But at the end of the day, nice to have is and making it take months and months and months versus, you know, letting people who are making decisions today about whether or not they're going to buy health care, whether or not we're going to further destabilize the individual market. Because I'll tell you, the healthy people aren't going to leave. They're leaving. And we've been seeing it for the past couple of years. This is another year where we're facing increases where people are going to say, I'm going to take my chances. and I'm going to hope I don't get hit by a car. I'm going to hope I don't get a skiing accident. But generally, I'm healthy. I don't go to the doctor. We know who all those young invincibles are. And so we also know that this population of 125,000 people are very sick. These are people who need their health care. They might have diabetes or asthma or a child who has chronic health conditions. These people need access to health care, and if they're making decisions in their family budget and seeing 50% increases in their family budget on health care, this is a really big deal, and they need this relief immediately. The plan in the DE amendment actually would provide relief in a matter of weeks, not many, many months. And it's been very fully vetted. Additionally, we need people.
Senator Halverson, are you filibustering your own amendment? I would have members please look at the time. I think we understand the amendment, but if you want to continue, that's fine. There was less time for discussion from others.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will just wrap up and say that we are going to put people on a path of paying higher premiums if we do not get people into the individual market and get them relief. And they need to know now, not in a month. Open enrollment closes on January 31st, and we need people to know now. So simple, direct, immediate is our goal with this amendment. The other thing I would just mention, per Representative Nash's concern, transition of care is certainly an immediate concern, and it is part of this proposal as well. So I would appreciate members' support on this amendment.
Thank you. Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to add, I have this incredibly cute dog. His name's Deacon, and he's a Great Dane, and he's a Labrador mix. He's 100 pounds of fun. And I took him into doggy daycare. My dog goes to doggy daycare, okay? The owner pulled me aside and said, my employees, the people that are taking care of your dog, are using one full paycheck to pay for their health care. They can't do rent, they can't do a house payment, they can't do a car payment, and they can't wait 6 months. When? We need something now. Plus, I've had a few phone calls, which I'm sure you've all had, and a few emails saying the same thing. People need the help now. So I would urge you to go with the governor's proposal. Is it going to get worked on? Yes. Is this a finished product? No. Is there plenty of time for vetting other proposals, policy issues, you know, all these things that all fall we wanted to do and never got to? Yeah, there is. There's time. We have time. Let's get the relief to our people now. I urge you to vote for the amendment.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Oh, and a roll call.
Roll call him and requested there will be a roll call. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Franz. No.
Commissioner.
I'll figure it out. I've seen you in a number of different roles here today. And I've been running back by state government finance, yes, as Chair Anderson knows. I asked this question in government finance today, and you had to take off to go to the Senate, I'm gathering. And I'm hoping that you can help me, because I asked the DE author, Representative Johnson, when he presented it in state government finance today. And my question goes to lines 2.19, basically to 2.23. That's the funding source, and it talks about the Health Care Access Fund. And Commissioner Franz, as the Commissioner of MMB, Minnesota Management and Budget, can you background a little bit for the committee what the Health Care Access Fund's mission is here in the state of Minnesota?
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, I can. For many of you, you'll know, in 1992, the Health Care Access Fund was enacted. And the Health Care Access Fund was created to increase access to health care, contain health care costs, and improve the quality of health care services for Minnesotans. That's my understanding of sort of the purpose of the Health Care Act Fund when it was initially enacted.
Mr. Chair?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Franz, a follow-up to that. So if we take funds from, $311 million, almost $312 million from the Health Care Access Fund, And as was pointed out by a number of members on this commission and Commissioner Rothman as well, that, you know, we've got a patient that was delivered to me without a pulse and no vital signs and stuff. What happens to this fund if we take that money out of there? Which group of people gets hurt if that fund doesn't have money in it as a result of which next group is going to have no pulse and no vital signs? And why is it that that's the okay group to target versus going to our reserves, which is our rainy day fund? And we're hearing from everybody around here, it's raining, raining cats and dogs.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, you raise a very good issue. And I think the governor, you may remember, proposed initially using the reserve money that was going to go in, that we had projected to go into the reserve in December, about $332 million, went into the reserve on December the 2nd. He had proposed initially using that money, like the same idea as a rainy day. Actually, he changed the funding to the Health Care Access Fund at the request of the Speaker at some time in December. And so obviously there is a concern. The Health Care Access Fund has an over $1 billion reserve in it, right, a surplus balance in it right now. But I think that's another area that we've talked about, that we can work together to make some kind of compromise to figure out the best way to fund this. The governor, I believe, is open to different funding mechanisms.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is my last comment on there. The Health Care Access Fund was set up with a specific goal, purpose, and funding and reserves in mind to take care of a certain group of Minnesotans. And I am concerned that if we take money out of here, we kick the stool off from underneath that group of Minnesotans in 2017, later in the session, or 2018, 2019, where backers saying it's even worse yet. Now we've got this next group. And so reserves seem to be a logical place in which to be able to provide that immediate relief.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Franz, thank you for being here. You had mentioned that in looking at how to resolve this problem that the administration had wrestled with, how you would do some kind of a income range verification to try to provide help to people who need it most. And I think to the point Representative Slocum made, I mean, these premium increases are huge and certainly stress in any family, but within those range of families, there are some for which this help may make the difference between being able to afford insurance, and others for which it will be a huge financial hit, but they're still going to get their insurance. What things did you look at trying to do? And, you know, with the MNsure portal, you referenced that briefly, but I guess I still don't understand why you couldn't do income verification through that, since it seems to me that system was set up to verify whether people would qualify for the federal subsidies. So why couldn't that same system be used for this purpose?
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, the rules of that system required under the Affordable Care Act, the MNsure system was arranged and the rules are programmed in a way to answer the questions under the Affordable Care Act. And so what we would have to do is write a different set of rules to bring in a different set of people to run them through this test with the means of the modified adjusted gross income under the federal hub. So we do not have permission to do that. We would have to seek permission to add another component. You just think of MNsure as a component dealing with the folks that they deal with. We would have to add a separate component that would then get permission to access that federal tax information to do the means testing. And so that's when the first part of your question, we went right away to the tax credit. When we thought, okay, this is October, November, if we get this thing enacted, people could get a tax break, and then we thought that was one of the easier ways to do it, because that everyone's a taxpayer, right? They're in that system generally. But we just felt like we couldn't, if we did that, it would not be 2018 before they got any actual relief. So you lose out on that cash flow ability of people who cannot afford in 2017. So when we backed off of that, the only other way to really test income is through some way to get the federal, some kind of taxable income, whether it's adjusted gross income or whatever. So we're not aware of any other way to do a means test that would allow us to segregate the groups of people who are making more than 800% of the poverty line. So that was our thought process.
Chair Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the committee legislative assistant will take the role on the Congressman Halverson moves, has moved the amendment. Committee Legislative Assistant will take the roll.
Chair Hoppe.
No.
Representative Fenton.
No.
Representative Allen.
Yes.
Representative Sarah Anderson.
No.
Representative Applebaum.
Yes.
Representative Barr.
No.
Representative Davids.
No.
Representative Franzen.
No.
Representative Halverson.
Yes.
Representative Hillstrom.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Kreisha.
No.
Representative Loon.
No.
Representative Loonen.
No.
Representative Nash.
No.
Representative O'Driscoll.
No.
Representative Pinto.
Yes.
Representative Rosenthal.
Yes.
Representative Slocum.
Yes.
Representative Smith.
No.
Representative Swedzinski.
No.
There being 8 ayes and 13 nays, the amendment is not adopted. We now have the bill before us as amended. Representative Hillstrom, who would you like to ask questions about?
Your Honor, or excuse
me, Mr. All things you could have said.
Oh, I don't have my tie. Thank you, Representative Hillstrom.
So, Mr. Chair, actually, I will pass on my questions. I'm going to be voting against this proposal, and I think that Representative Halverson's proposal would have been the best parts of both of these proposals, the governor's proposal to get immediate relief, as well as then the continuity of care, which I support. However, I am very concerned about allowing for profit health care. Many of these unvetted proposals have not even begun. I can't imagine, Mr. Chair, that you've discussed whether or not that there's going to be taxes if you make an HMO for profit, and all of a sudden they're sitting on $1 billion. What's going to happen to that money, and what the tax is going to be? And so I think that there are many, many pieces in House File 1 that have not been fully vetted, in addition to the civil law issues that I already talked about. And so, Mr. Chair, I will pass on the remaining items of my questions and just vote no. Okay.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Questions from members? Representative Pinto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, so how much will we save with the income eligibility restriction? Like, how much are we saving by not paying people above the certain income? I guess this is for the bill's author or for the commissioner.
Chairman Hoppe?
Mr. Chair and Representative Pinto, I guess I'm not exactly sure. It depends on how many people wind up signing up and getting health insurance this year, and then where they fall during the, you know, different levels, the different tiers.
Representative Pinto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm, as the commissioner, and I forget, Commissioner, if you'd said this in your testimony here, but I understand separately that the department's estimating about $20 million cost. So one thought that I'm having is just, would we save at least $20 million from doing this, is one question.
Commissioner Franz?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I have to be honest, we don't know. Just like Chair Hoppe said, it's difficult. This is a group of people we're not really all that familiar with. We're trying to do some modeling to figure out what kind of coverage are they going to buy, so how much are they going to spend, and what kind of income they have. It goes all around the state, so it's a difficult question. I think I can honestly say that we will spend millions of dollars giving relief to people who are higher income folks. I don't know how many millions that is, and I don't know if it equalizes the cost that goes into our, or under our equation. We felt that quicker certain relief was more important than excluding people at the top.
Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so you've estimated the cost, Commissioner, is $20 million, and the bill allocates, I think it's around $9 million. I could be wrong, but I think that's about right. So I guess maybe this is a question for the bill's author, but you know, we allocated funds to the department to do certain tasks and allocated this amount of money, a certain amount of money to do those tasks. We're now expecting the department to do more. It seems, and I'm not trying to be facetious here, but it seems like there are things the department won't be able to do if they're spending time and money on this, and we're doing this kind of unfunded mandate. So I guess what's your reaction to that, Chair Hoppe?
Well, members, I'm concerned about the road we're going down here with finance questions. This is not the committee for finance questions. We have finance committees that have people that do revenue notes and fiscal notes and those types of things. I don't think these questions are very appropriate for the Commerce Committee. But do you have any comments?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Pinto and members, I keep saying this, but this is a work in progress, and Representative Pinto, I'd be happy to talk to you afterward. We're going to have more hearings, this, assuming it passes today and gets through Ways and Means. We're going to go to a conference committee with the Senate, and ultimately, we have to have a bill we can pass, the Senate has to pass it, and then the governor has to sign it. So I'm confident that, and I'll say this while I'm speaking, Representative Halverson, I meant to speak before your bill, I misunderstood the chair. Thank you for, you know, your work. The Commissioner Rothman said that we need to work on this in a bipartisan fashion. We have been. I mean, we started, I don't know, 2 weeks before the election. We didn't know who was going to win the election. All we knew is that there was a problem and that something's going to be different in 2018. So House, Senate, members from both parties, and a lot of our staff, DFL staff, Republican staff, nonpartisan staff, have been working on this issue a lot and will continue to do so. This is not the final product. We're going to continue to work with Commissioner Franz and the administration. We're going to try to find a way out of this, and hopefully we'll get answers to all of these questions. My guess is, I'm going to go on a limb here, not every single House member will wind up voting for this at the end of the day. Not every senator will wind up voting for it at the end of the day, but we got to compromise, and we got to come up with something we can both live with and that the governor will sign.
Representative Pinto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be done.
Okay. Any other comments from members? Okay, with that, I would just like to, and I think everybody realizes here, we all have the same goal. Minnesotans are hurting. The governor's office has stepped forward. The speaker and majority leader over in the Senate have stepped forward with ideas. This is, like I said, this is not the final vote, and we're all going to have input all the way along here. And so I look forward to, when it comes to the money questions and so forth, to working with Commissioner Franz and Commissioner Rothman to get this done. We have to deliver here. And I thank Representative Halverson for offering that amendment. There's going to be some ideas from both sides, but we have to get this thing moving so we can get to Ways and Means and the discussion continues. You want to wrap it up, Chairman Hoppe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will. I'd like to thank Commissioner Franz for being here and the Senate and back here and other committees. I don't know how many committee stops you've had today, but we'll keep working with Commissioner Franz and the administration, and I appreciate it. And this is, you know, again, a work in progress, and there's going to be a lot more input in it. Couple of things, going back to a couple of other things where I just have notes here. I think it was Commissioner Rothman that was talking about stop loss and how the NAIC was, you know, talking about stop loss. From what I understand, the NAIC with stop loss, they didn't find any adverse selection. And looking at the report from Maryland, I don't think the state of Maryland found adverse selection was going to be a problem with stop loss either. Minor issue. One of the little things of reform, one of the things we can continue to talk about. And I'll leave it with this. So I said this earlier, we didn't know what was going to happen in the election. We knew that there was a problem in 2017. We want to make sure there's an individual insurance, health insurance market for 2018 and into perpetuity. There is a difference between health care and health insurance, and we all need to start that, you know, with that as a basis. And when we're talking about, and I think the commissioner mentioned that this would be a drastic change if we went and looked at a for-profit insurance company, a health insurance company, a drastic change would also be having nobody that wanted to sell health insurance in the individual market in Minnesota. So all of us, Democrats, Republican, House, and Senate, all of us here working on this, we got to get to the bottom of that issue. And I will tell you, Mr. Chair, and everybody on the committee, and Representative Hillstrom, I will talk to Representative Hillstrom and Representative Scott, make sure we address the civil law issues. You know, we're going to try to put together the best bill that we can. If you like it, it's my bill. If not, a lot of people had input into this thing. And with that, Mr. Chair, members, I appreciate your support, and I appreciate your green vote.
Thank you. Representative Hoppe renews his motion that we move House File Number 1 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. Further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Okay, with that, anything else for the good of the order, Chair Hoppe?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. Tomorrow we start at 3. Can't get used to the new schedule. We're going to talk more, something new for the committee. We're going to talk about health insurance reform. It'll be fun.
Oh, can't wait. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.